AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Yeah, it is. Matt and Eric here today. Eric, we got Jeff Stein coming up here in a little bit. Are you excited at all about, we've talked a little bit about this already, but the Avengers movie coming on, right? Yeah, you going to see this, the Endgame?
I'll probably see it. I'm not, you know, anxiously awaiting it.
You're not going to be Thursday nighter?
No.
All right. Probably for your best sanity, because it sounds like, I mean, that's where you're going to get some really, I think, over the top, you know, crowds. The weekend, for the most part, is looking like, they said that all the showings are averaging somewhere around 65 to 70% sold already.
Really?
Wow. Think about that. That's nuts. That's freaking nuts. Here's the reason I'm bringing it up, because the reviewers finally got wind of this. And part of me was always a little concerned that it just could not live up to the hype. And right now on Rotten Tomatoes, the review is at 97%. And that's with like 70, 80 reviews in. And a lot of their top critics too.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Okay. So the question I have for you, all right? Do you think the critics are kind of like what happened with Lord of the Rings? I could make a very good argument that all three of those films should have been the best picture. I could make a very strong argument Two Towers should have definitely been best picture that year. All three of those films were good, but because it was science fiction fantasy, mm-hmm. that was usually never really taken, you know, looked at that well in the eyes. But Jackson did such a great job with those movies that, you know, Return of the King was a gimme. I think that was the minute that movie came on out, it was a gimme. That was going to win. This is different. I mean, it's science fiction fantasy, of course, with superheroes. But we've never seen anything like this. And a part of me wonders if these reviews are coming in so high because we've never seen, there was the Sherlock Holmes movies of like the 40s, uh-huh. Basil Rathbone and so like that. Buck Rogers had like pilots before movies, but those were like 10 minutes long. And, it was a running pilot. It was like a TV show back then. So I don't know if that would really apply. I mean, you've basically in 10 years had the equivalent of the entire Bond franchise.
Yeah.
And you can make an argument. I mean, the Bond franchise has some duds in it. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Man with a Golden Gun. For goodness sakes, what are you thinking there? You know, really, what are you thinking there? But you're one of these dives. I always keep thinking, I think that's why, The one they did with not Spectre, the one before that with James Bond, where he was with
Casino Royale.
No, Judi Dench. It was up. That was the last one with Judi Dench. They're up in Scotland. Albert Finney showed up. There was a lot of people talking about giving it that one an Oscar, just because the critics kind of like that. You know, all right, we're gonna surrender. Sure, you had some dud years, but we're overall going to reward the long term. You guys have stuck around.
Sure, you put in the work.
You put in the work. We're going to give it to you. And part of me wonders if a 97 on a Rotten Tomatoes for the Avengers Endgame is just, okay, no one. I remember freaking out when I heard, wait a minute, you're going to do a Iron Man movie, a Captain America movie, and a Thor movie, and then the first Avengers movie? No way.
Yeah, there's so many.
Now it's that seems quaint, and it's the template for all of these outlets. I mean, they're desperately trying to turn both Harry Potter and Star Wars into kind of these long-term franchises with multiple branches. I don't know. But, it's 3 hours long. Usually critics punish movies that long unless they're like historical romances. 3 hours long, and it's getting a 97. I don't know. I mean, could it be a top 10 film?
This all could be C pluses, right?
No, you're right. You're positive, negative. Most of them are giving them pretty decent reviews. So, I mean, there's always the nerdfest.com. It was the greatest thing ever. Yeah. But I always like going and finding that one or two negative reviews and seeing, who basically, messed with your cornflakes this morning. That's what I like to.
I'm interested in seeing those criticisms.
Yeah. It's
the lighting was bad.
How dare they? It's a superhero movie, man.
Yeah.
No, and I think that the fact that you're seeing, Black Panther was nominated across the board, I think that, it's changing now. And now good science fiction and fantasy, I think, has just as much of a chance as anything else. I mean, Mad Max Fury Road. I mean,
that was great.
That was a phenomenal film. And 20 years ago, even if that film was released 20 years ago, it still would have never gotten a chance because it would have been, it's just a post-apocalyptic film. You know, the people that grew up in the 80s who are now making these movies, who are now reviewing these movies and, you know, voting on these movies is now basically getting past some of those, it has to be weepy romance, has to be weepy drama sort of thing. I'm going to see it. I'm seeing it this weekend. I got tickets for a 10 a.m. showing this weekend, and it's already – I'm going to say it's 85% sold for that showing.
Yeah. Those big movies, though, they have so many theaters showing it at the same time. You know, screens go running.
That's why it's nuts that almost all – it's like they're running at like a 65 to 70% sellout rate already. And, of course, it's how many people are going to impulsively try to go into these shows. I mean, I mentioned the story when I was a kid. I went to Star Wars. My parents – and this is back in the day where you went to a movie theater and it had two screens or one screen. That was it. Mm-hmm. And we pull in. My parents drop us off. And, you know, as we're waiting in line, there's a big sign that says sold out. They're selling tickets basically. The people that were in line were just waiting for the next showing. The tickets – because there were no reserved seats back then. It was a free-for-all. Yeah, you know, just a free-for-all to run in the theater as soon as they swept it out. And so there's, you know, they were selling for like 3 days down the road. And by the grace of God, my parents had just turned into the gas station across the way, so we were able to run over and catch them. But it was a I just remember that as a kid. It was a – you know, not seeing anything like that. This is kind of what it feels like. Feels like that the Force Awakens kind of thing. You know, it's like, okay, I haven't seen movie excitement like this in a while. 952-946-6205. So there you go. You know, good luck. Get your tickets now if you want to see it anywhere near it. I want to bring up the Chaska story again, once again here. If you missed the story from yesterday, there was a pretty heated meeting where Chaska High School and the Chaska School District have to explain exactly how in the hell this racism problem got so bad down there. There's one particular – I mean, all these incidents are unacceptable. I should say there's probably two. One had an N-word written on a student's gym shirt, which, come on. You can't – that's in school. Someone's got to be punished for that. But another more recent social media post showed the faces of roughly two dozen black students from Chaska on a map labeled Negro Hill. And that is so wildly unacceptable, I'm having a hard time believing. And this apparently was posted on social media. I'm having a hard time believing kids can't get thrown out. And I keep hearing kind of – and I've described this and I've labeled this the Anoka-Hennepin School District kind of excuses. Where, you know, if you remember, Anoka-Hennepin School District was infiltrated. Their school board was infiltrated by religious zealots who believed that you should bully gay kids to death. And it was. I mean, it was disgusting. You had so many dead kids in the Anoka-Hennepin County School District because the school board was basically saying, how are we supposed to stop the bullies? They have the freedom of speech, you know. And, you know, even went as far as prohibiting teachers from stopping kids from verbally assaulting students in the halls, even though the kids were clearly in the wrong, because the most important is freedom of speech. Well, freedom of speech doesn't protect hate speech. It does not. You have the right to say things, but there are consequences for what you say. And finally, Anoka-Hennepin wised up and voted those people out of there. And it didn't help. And also some lawsuits there, you know, kind of pushed things along too. But I mean, that's the level of freaking ignorance you have to have for this sort of thing to go on. And one of the things they say is, well, it's on social media. What are we supposed to do? I don't know if it's a bunch of students from your schools and they're even using photos from like the yearbook and they put them on there. You can track this down. You can track this down. It's social media. You can track this back to where it began and expel the kid. Well, you know, gee willikers, it happened outside of school and it's on a social media. We don't like it, but what are we supposed to do? Stop freaking placating the racist parents in your freaking district and chuck the racist kids out of your freaking school. How difficult is this, for God's sakes, Chaska? Really? You want to split hairs? You're dealing with a problem with basically a bunch of kids swinging sledgehammers, and you're trying to act like you're in the microbiology lab. If you have students doing racist things to other students. I don't care if it's outside of school, in school. You have to look at the fact that they're creating an environment of hate. And you trying to make excuses. Like I said, where, I mean, we looked, we were talking about all their, you know, their answers. Where was it here? I got detailed a series of steps in district plans to take, including stepped up training in teachers and administrators, the creation of community-based equal equity committee, and an emphasis on hiring more diverse staff. How about expelling the racist creeps? How about that? How about throwing them out by their ear into the street and saying, you're not welcome in our school? How about that? How about just saying that? If you're racist and you like being racist, take your butt out of our school and go find a different school because we don't want it here. How about that statement? My gosh, heaven forbid the school district actually, I don't know, protect the students. Heaven forbid. You cannot have this. And yesterday I did mention as well that the parallels of this story and these guys that are these white guys that are coming out of these exo suburbs into places like the Eden Prairie Mall, the area there, and they're thinking that they're basically going to set these minorities straight. You cannot tolerate racism. And for God's sakes, just because you're in a white district that votes Republican, don't be cowards. The reason why these cockroaches have come out of the darkness is because people have, well, gee willikers, there's a lot of people in this district who might kind of agree with that. So, you know, I don't know if I want to make a statement. Make the statement. Make the statement. And if the school district fires you because you went after the racist, trust me, someone will hire you. And the school district even looks worse. Your standards, what your Chaska High School, Chaska School District, what you're doing sucks. It sucks. Your kids are scared. You basically have not dealt with this problem, and you are not taking this seriously. And by the way, what I have seen in the media is an attempt to hide the fact that it's Chaska. Oh, it's the Eastern Carver School District. It's Chaska, okay? It's school district 112. It's Chaska. Stop trying. God, nothing bothers me more than the media afraid to call out this stuff in these districts by the name of the school. I'm surprised you didn't label it in a school district 20 miles away from Hopkins as a way to deflect. Have the guts to call it out because it's by allowing these people to hide in plain sight, we continue to have these problems. And for God's sakes, it's time for the Chaska School Board, who, if you are concerned about sending the wrong message to the racist parents, well, then resign. Resign. You got 22% of that school district. 22% of that school district is minority kids. And you've already decided, well, I'm not going to do anything to help those kids. Because there's 10% of the school district who are horrible racist families. And we're going to basically put them above the minority kids who are constantly getting threatened. Now, you need to stomp this out and now. Racism has no place in our society, and it sure as hell does not have any place in our schools. And Chaska, I'm paying attention to this now. I'm watching what you guys are doing. And anything more than, and if you start making excuses about what you can't do, you're failing. Protect your kids, for God's sakes. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got two more stories before we get to Stein. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Art lovers, it's time to celebrate, learn about, and collect local art at the St. Paul Art Crawl, running April 26th to 28th. The Spring St. Paul Art Crawl, presented by the St. Paul Art Collective, is a must-do experience that you will love. Over the weekend, you will have the chance to explore a wide variety of art while touring through local artists' studios, lofts, and galleries. Up for purchase will be paintings, photography, pottery, sculpture, fiber arts, and more. The Art Crawl sprawls over 34 locations. Join the Art Crawl and discover outstanding art for your own. And when you buy local art, you're providing to artists so that they may continue to create the art we love. The Metro Transit is supporting the local art community, too, with free transit passes. Download your pass to ride buses and light rail for free during the Art Crawl. Be sure to get details at stpaulartcrawl.org. That's stpaulartcrawl.org.
Hi, this is Charlie. Dad, do I have to say this next line?
How much can you get for a used Xbox?
Fine. My father is the voice of his generation, Matt McNeil.
Fantastic!
My dad loves me driving the Toyota Sienna, and the Sienna is incredibly reliable. While my dad drives the new one, mine is over 10 years old and still runs great.
A vehicle with amazing reliability, an incredible service department, and the Luther Advantage card, you get that with Rudy Luther Toyota. We're a two Sienna family thanks to Rudy Luther, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Victor's 1959 Cafe in South Minneapolis is a locally owned and operated restaurant offering traditional Cuban food. Open for breakfast and lunch daily with dinner Tuesday through Saturday. For night shift workers, Victor's even has both a morning and evening happy hour, and Victor's now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try some delicious, authentic Cuban cuisine like ropa vieja and seafood paella. Make your reservation and learn more at victors1959cafe.com. Victor's 1959 Cafe, revolutionary Cuban cooking.
Hi, this is Paul Mezza inviting all of you out there in AM 950 land to listen to my radio show, The Wall of Power Radio Hour, every weekend on AM 950. We feature musicians, actors, politicians, homicide cops, record stores, Mezza documentaries. We've even had Bob Dylan's first drummer on Saturday nights at 6 p.m., replayed Sunday at 4 p.m. You can also follow it at paulmezza.com. The Wall of Power Radio Hour, cool people from all walks of life in all 50 states.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. So, do you remember a few weeks back, we talked about how Senator Mary Kiffmeyer, for some inexplicable reason, was basically preventing the state from getting the full amount of federal election security money available to it. We are the only state in the union that has not accepted this money. We are the only state in the union. And it's pretty remarkable that you would not have a state like this, you know, take advantage of. I mean, once again, it's a minimal investment from the state side. It's like $160,000. We get $6 million for election security. It's a good thing to have. It is a very good thing to have. And Mary Kiffmeyer, we don't know what her motivations are. I mean, she could be for the Russians. I don't know. I mean, and I'm dead serious. She could be for the Russians because we know the Russians have been trying to hack into elections and stuff like that. I don't know. It could be that Mary Kiffmeyer is throwing a little personal, you know, pity party for herself because she was the Secretary of State and she lost that voter ID law. And then they threw me out of office. And I'm so angry still. And I mean, that could very well be. I don't know. She seems like a real petty, small human being. She really does. She's a really pathetic person. I don't know. I have no idea. Eric, I do not know.
No,
I don't know. I don't know what her motivation is. She could just be stupid. I mean, she could really
That's
just be. You mean this, she could be dumb as my water bottle here. I don't know. Actually, that water bottle is full. So, I mean, half empty water bottle. Let's go. I don't know. I don't know. But then came the Mueller report. And in the Mueller report, Robert Mueller himself pointed out, no, the Russians were given election information from Paul Manafort, the campaign chair of Trump. The GRU agents got information on Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. They actually mentioned Minnesota's election information and campaign strategy from the Trump campaign going to the GRU agent for the Russians. Wow, okay, different story. Okay, whatever her pettiness was before, you're thinking to yourself, you know what? All right, enough's enough. We're moving ahead. Clearly, this is a larger problem. We're going to have to do that. Funny story. There is a picture that was put out by the DFL. They had a committee vote Tuesday on a bill intended to strengthen the cybersecurity, protecting Minnesota's proportionally large number of votes. Every Republican, the three conservative Republicans, they ducked the committee vote Tuesday on a bill. Conservatives have actually skipped two votes on this bill and have a pretty good explanation for why they want to prevent you from voting. They just don't want to state it publicly. The bill, backed by, guessed it, Steve Simon, the Secretary of State, comes at only a minor cost to the state, $167,000, gets $6 million available through the help from the Help America Vote Act. This is money that's already been dedicated to Minnesota. All we have to do is vote and accept it. but like real ID, idiots run amok in the Republican Party in Minnesota. Mary Kiffmeyer, herself a former Secretary of State who served during the Ventura Pawlenty era, said in a statement, the Minnesota elections are secure and the use of paper ballots protects us from hackers, Russian or otherwise. Funny story, you need to read the Mueller report, Mayor. We will continue to examine the use of the Secretary of State's office funds to make sure to be sure his priority is on election security and integrity, Kiffmeyer said meaninglessly. Because if you were really caring about this, you would take the $6 million that we have available to us and use it for security, you idiot. And if you're wondering, Kiffmeyer is putting out a statement instead of talking to the Pioneer Press about this matter. It's probably because how deeply inserted foot, ankle, and most of her calf in the mouth while being interviewed for a Sunday story in the Star Tribune. This is what she actually said. This is, by the way, out of City Pages brought this one up. This is what she actually said. People are being hacked all the time. You're being hacked all the time. I am. This is no big thing. Oh, really? Because I've had friends who have been hacked. And it was a pretty big deal. It was a pretty big deal for them. And if all of a sudden the election of Minnesota got hacked, the vote totals got hacked, and we at least temporarily reported that someone who didn't win the state won the state, I think that would be a big deal. I personally think that would be a huge deal. God, I don't know what is wrong with you, Mary Kiffmeyer. Seriously, what the hell is wrong with you? Are you really just petty that you're not the Secretary of State anymore? Is that really all this is? Is this you're just angry because you're not in charge anymore? I mean it is beyond comical now. How you've actually have a formal report saying Minnesota's election security is being threatened, and you're like, who cares? A little hacking. What's the big deal? You are a horrible human being, Mary Kiffmeyer. You are. You really are a horrible human being. And if you're this petty and little, maybe you should resign from office. And I don't know. Maybe become like the rat catcher in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. You can run around and grab kids, you know? I mean, I don't know. That seems a little bit more in line with your mentality as far as a job goes. For my opinion. I mean, that's what it seems like. I don't know. Why don't you come on, Mayor? As a matter of fact, I got three microphones here. Mary, you can pick whichever microphone you want to be on. Mary, you can come on this show and explain yourself to the masses. Why, when we have been targeted by the Russians, would you not take free money available and then say, well, we're committed to election safety? It sounds like you're not. Also, from Bluestem Prairie, I wanted to make sure I mentioned, you know, Front Row Joe, this is this Trump nutbag from Lakefield who has followed around and basically ended up getting disorderly conduct at an Elizabeth Warren event in February. This is a guy who apparently has let his dogs run free. That and he's it's just in the dogs have been brutal and been very, I don't know what's going on. A Lakefield man who made international headlines early this year following the death of his dog Donald J. Trump appeared this week at Jackson County District Court on criminal cases related to alleged continued nuisance by his Alaskan Malamute dogs. According to the court records, Randall Tom, 59, Front Row Joe, was arraigned in two criminal cases related to the death of nearly two dozen chickens, two goats, at least two cats, and allegedly occurred as a result of three separate attacks from his unattended dogs. The incidents occurred after the February 10th death of his Malamute, named after the 45th president, was rumored to have been killed in a politically motivated gunfire. It wasn't. It was a farmer came out to find a dog ripping apart one of its goats, and so he shot it. That's why Donald J. Trump got shot.
And these are three attacks that killed dozens of animals?
Yeah. I mean, it's nuts.
So they were just going on rampages.
The office had 14 reports related to Tom's dogs running a large on the road in a county park into neighbors' private property, biting a person who required medical attention, attacking other dogs, chasing cattle and deer, killing goats, chickens, and turkeys. Tom said that years ago, a couple of his dogs killed four of the neighbors' goats. Tom claimed to have paid them. So this is a completely different incident. Four goats were killed by his dogs. $1,000 brought them to an argument to get along. Tom has been served with two potentially dangerous dog notifications, has been a pending misdemeanor charge. charges the incidents related to his dogs in the press release, but really said that the sheriff's office conducted and completed an investigation related to the circumstances of the dog's February 10th death. The investigation, the release said, found that the owner was legally protecting their livestock on their property at the private property at the time. According to the Minnesota state statute, the livestock owner and caretaker may kill a dog found chasing, injuring, worrying other animals there. So these animals, I mean, you think you've got your biggest problem is that your neighbor's dog goes to the bathroom and the guy doesn't pick it up in your yard here? This guy's animals are killing. How much money did you just lose with a dozen chickens? And I don't want to dismiss the lives of the chickens here in any capacity, but I mean, that's part of your money. That's part of your food. That's goats. I mean, if you sell goat milk or, sell goat meat, I mean, you just lost part of your product.
I guess over $1,000.
A few thousand, my guess. And this guy just doesn't stop. I mean, clearly, and, the dogs obviously are a nuisance animal. They need to be addressed. But this guy should not be allowed to have dogs because he clearly is a horrible owner and he does not train or take care of his dogs. Because at the very least, you let your dogs run free, they're going to get hit by a car. And that's not a way, you should know better. You should take care of the animals. And then you should also think a little bit about your neighbor's animals who are all getting slaughtered by your pack of rabid Alaskan Malamutes. Seriously.
It's unbelievable.
But he loves Donald Trump. I love the fact that this guy basically, because if I remember correctly, he pushed the idea that his dog, Donald J. Trump, was shot for political motivations. It was being said it was. He kind of went along with it. You find out now it was a neighboring farmer who had to kill Donald J. Trump because Donald J. Trump was chasing after his goats. And, of course, insert your own Eric and Donald Jr. joke here, but that's why it was. I mean, the guy was, he knew that he was in the wrong, and it didn't help him stop him from basically putting forward this idea.
Maybe his politics involved not having his livestock eaten by another man's dog.
Tell the truth. A rabid Donald J. Trump running through the area of Lakefield, Minnesota is probably still a better option than what we actually have in the White House at this point. Stein, when we do return, 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Donna Minter, founder and executive director of the Minnesota Peacebuilding Leadership Institute. Please join us Wednesday, April 24th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Riverview Theater in Minneapolis for LunaFest, our women's film festival for community peacebuilding. We'll show 8 internationally curated short films by, for, and about women. We'll raffle off 7 baskets filled with thousands of dollars worth of gift cards, merchandise, and service vouchers. This year, Minneapolis City Council Vice President Andrea Jenkins will be our honorary LunaFest chairwoman. $25 gets you 8 short films and festivities. $50 gets all of that and the after party at the Riverview Cafe. The best part is the proceeds benefit Minnesota Peacebuilding Leadership Institute programs and our Racial and Economic Equity Trainee Scholarship Fund. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit mnpeace.org and find LunaFest under events. That's mnpeace.org. See you there.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their 2 convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Hi, this is Charlie. Dad, are you sure you want me to say this next line?
It will help me get appeal with the kiddos in your generation.
If you're sure. My father is the home slice who's keeping it dope fresh, Matt McNeil.
Word, G.
Sure thing, Dad. When I buy my first vehicle, I'm heading to Rudy Luther Toyota. I love my Sienna, and that quality is featured in every one of their vehicles.
Rudy Luther Toyota has an incredible selection of new vehicles and is the 7th largest Toyota-certified pre-owned dealer in the country. Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
I'm Connie Burek, co-host of Awakened Living Infusion radio show. Join Michelle Kitzmiller and I as we focus on all aspects of health, wellness, spirituality, and growth from a mind, body, spirit, emotion perspective. On the Awakened Living radio show, we will discuss stress, self-care, fear, happiness, beliefs, communication, joy, pain, trauma, and more. Join us for the Awakened Living Infusion radio show Saturdays at 10 a.m. Let us share with you ways to infuse vitality into life.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Haas. Today, mostly sunny with a high near 74. Tonight, chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 48. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 68. The Minneapolis Farmers Market is opening soon with locations at Lindale, Nicollet Mall, and the Minneapolis Government Center. The Lindale location opens April 27th. They'll have meat vendors, some homestead vendors, and greenhouse vendors. Learn more at mplsfarmersmarket.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. EatLocalMinnesota.com. Restaurant of the week is Nightingale. Love that place. 2551 Lindale Avenue in Minneapolis. Great plates there. Some great vegetarian options as well. Just fantastic food. The smoked mushroom risotto, very tasty. And great seafood, too. That's one of the nice things you can get there. It's in Minnesota, seafood, yeah, sometimes it's not that good. And I'll tell you what, go over to Nightingale. It's fantastic there. Stop on by. Once again, 2551 Lindale Avenue in South Minneapolis. Nightingale is the EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert. He's a noted author. You can find his books at Common Good Books in St. Paul, totallyiowa.com. IowaWatch.org is the public service show that he's part of. And he's joining us from KXEL Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I am well. By the way, I'm hearing some women talking in the background, so I think they're sending two things down the line.
Alrighty, that could be is I don't know if do we have women here talking? I mean, most, let's face it, it's not exactly, we're kind of the repellent for the opposite sex here at this radio station, you know.
Well, it's two women having a conversation. I've looked around my room, and I'm the only one in here, but we can soldier forth. There, I think they went away. I think they went in the hallway.
There you go. They realized, oh, my God, it's radio people.
I have successfully repelled.
I'm like a walking Rush concert, for God's sakes. All right, so I want to start off with, well, I mean, I think we can talk a lot here this show about Trump's new tactic. Clearly, I think he is scared to death about what is going on with the Mueller report. I think he's terrified of what was redacted in the Mueller report coming forward. He's clearly terrified of his taxes coming to light. And so this new approach from the White House is no one's going to listen to a subpoena. Everything's got to go through a court. Everything's going to go to the Supreme Court. They're going to say, you know, and my guess is they're going to challenge everything. You know, it's very Nixonian. I mean, the idea of I'm going to refuse to cooperate. Although Nixon didn't put forward this level of roadblock during his troubles.
Well, there, you and I are generally in agreement. I'm going to diverge from you in a couple of respects. I don't think he cares about the taxes because, again, the taxes don't show you sources of income. What he's scared to death about is investigation into actual financial records that either the Southern District of New York or a prosecutorial arm could look at. That's a different sort of thing than taxes. Taxes is one of these low-hanging fruit sort of things. I don't think they will show us anything, but it is indicative, to your point, of a broader idea that nobody gets to see anything, okay? The other thing is I'm not sure that the redacted material is of concern because there's enough in there that we already know.
Yep.
And you and I talked about this before, and this is not me just, you know, blowing smoke at you or anything, but as you have noted and as we have discussed – the Mueller report was never going to lead to an indictment against Trump because of a myriad of reasons, chief among them being the attorney general's office opinion that you can't indict a sitting president.
Well, it's not just this attorney general. I should say that is a rule. Is it 73 they put that rule in? That the Department of Justice –
the attorney general's office.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Yes. It's not this individual. It's the office. It's not this individual. But the thing that we said that – the Mueller report would do is sort of be the trail of breadcrumbs that would lead a member of Congress down the road toward impeachment. And that is what you are seeing. You're seeing these little things that may or may not rise to the level of beyond a reasonable doubt criminal indictment. The fact – now, Mueller could have gone further if he had more in this narrow way. He could have indicted all sorts of sons and sons-in-laws and others, and the president could have been listed as an unindicted co-conspirator. That would have been the optimal game plan for impeachment. He obviously didn't have enough or he would have done that. But there is enough – because you're talking different standards here. There is enough for investigation. There is enough for the possibility of impeachment proceedings. And for those and I've said, is it really worth it to the Democrats to go forward with impeachment given the calendar and when the next election is? Well, frankly, why not?
Yes.
You know, I'm now turning around this way. Why not do it? Because let's say you don't get it done by November of 2020 or January of 2021. What you've done is you've set the table that could poison the well of voters, first of all. In other words, could that not be the most effective electoral strategy?
Yes.
So that's number one. Number two is, sure, there's a new Congress that takes over in 2021 and it's a clean slate. But what if you have a Democrat majority in both because of the things you've investigated in the meantime? I mean, you have to be realistic about the chance of him being ousted before Election Day 2020. But again, it's a longer game than that.
One quick thing I'll go back to. There's a reason he doesn't want people to see his taxes. And I understand what you're saying is that he's fighting tooth and nail to stop Deutsche Bank from delivering what they've been subpoenaed for. He does not want that to happen. But there's a reason he is fighting tooth and nail. And Mnuchin himself is coming out and saying, well, there's no way in the world that we're going to hand over the tax returns. You know, even though the law states, well, no, the House Ways and Means Committee chairperson can see anything. You know, that's the law. So, you know, there's a reason that they don't want. And it's not just, you know, playing the other side. They're trying to hide something.
Whether they're hiding something specific, we're not really in a disagreement here. I don't think the tax returns show you anything, but he is denying he doesn't want to release them because of this broad thing. Let's say you release the taxes, all right, but not supporting documents that show where income comes from. Now you've raised a question there. In other words, by simply doing the full Trump stonewall, he's able to just batten down all the hatches.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I still don't think there's anything in the tax return, but that might be the crumb that leads you somewhere else. And that's the place he doesn't want to go. And that's why, first of all, nobody gets anything. Second of all, we're not going to comply with any subpoenas. Third, when he is asked, now this is where, and I hate using phrases like Nixonian and, you know, comparing somebody to Hitler, because nothing ever ends well. But sometimes it's warranted. And for example, when you've got a president of the United States who's asked, are you upset the report indicates that some people in your administration disobeyed your orders? Speaking in particular of Don McGahn and firing Mueller, Trump's response was a defiant, no one disobeys my orders. Okay, Don Corleone, whatever you got there. I mean, it's the attitude, okay? And so that's why – you can tell – let's say that there was obstruction. What is he obstructing, right? I mean, what's he trying to get in the way of? If, in fact, there was no collusion, then what is it that you're trying – you know, in essence, that gets us to the cover-up is worse than the crime. It's sort of like, let's really make sure that nobody investigates even though there's nothing to find, right? I mean, that's the height of – a bit of a pathological situation, much more narcissistic, and that ties into the I'm not going to show anybody anything, and oh no, nobody ever disobeys my orders. Really? You ought to be glad they did, because you'd have a world of hurt right now.
Okay, and just a sign of the world we live in, John Stewart or John Oliver, thank God for comedians, actually had the most succinct last week tonight. Actually had the most succinct breakdown. He said what this report says is one, Mueller can't charge him because of these DOJ rules. Two, mm-hmm. that that basically I want Congress to look at it. As you said, you know, he's setting this up. This is your job now. I've done my part. It's your turn. And thirdly, right. that not only does he, you know, did he try to find Trump innocent of obstruction, then he couldn't. But as well, I mean, there's a lot of dots to connect on the Russian connections as well. When you look historically at the impeachments we've had, was it Andrew Jackson was Bank of America?
Johnson.
Excuse me, Johnson. Johnson was I thought there was a threat.
Jackson had his own problems.
Yeah, I think Henry Clay was going to go after Jackson on impeachment on that Bank of America's. Johnson was relatively incompetent on a lot of different levels, but it was still a far cry from where we're at now. I mean, he was doing what he wanted to do, and you know, comparatively, it's a hard thing to place in there. Clinton was a case where they said he lied about sex under oath after the Whitewater investigation, and the Starr report was what the Republicans at that point waved in everyone's face, saying this is our justification. Here's the Mueller report. Comparatively, I mean, the idea, and there have been quite a few conservatives who have stepped up now and said, no, there should be an impeachment here, because impeachment, we're talking about the presidency, and it shouldn't be something where it's like a Sopranos episode where everyone looks at the office, knows he's guilty of crimes. It's just we can't put the finger on it. You're supposed to be better than that. You're supposed to be there, and that the Mueller report shows that this is a man who is grossly unqualified to be in that chair, and we could do better. And the argument that conservatives are making is we could do better with Mike Pence in there. As opposed to them, at least we won't have, you know, porn stars and you know, this in this kind of delusional ranting going on. And it's an interesting argument. That's where the conservatives are. But the reality is that's exactly what this is. I mean, I think there was a lot of people from the conservative side who are screaming at Democrats initially, don't you dare impeach. But the longer this sets in, the argument becomes, how, you know, if the Democrats don't go forward, this is how, why did you not go forward with this? Because as far as a standard goes, this by far exceeds. I mean, it's hard to compare the Johnson stuff, but with Clinton, it's by far exceeding what they went after Clinton for. And clearly it gets to a point where and you and I talked last week about Benghazi. They investigated Benghazi 8 times. If they found anything in Benghazi, they would have impeached President Obama. This goes way beyond that. I think that the Democrats really don't have an option. I think that Steny Hoyer and Pelosi can sit there and say, let's move on and try to be diplomats. The reality is, with especially that freshman class that's come in, no, enough's enough. And if this report is showing what's going on here, that's enough to remove him from office.
Here's how you can tell that. And there are two things that I think are important here. To your most recent point, Congress is in the middle of the Easter recess. This is the second of 2 weeks. Most members of Congress, Senate and House, are going all throughout their districts and their states doing town meetings. They are talking with constituents. Some are much more engaged, some are much more distant, but still they're talking with constituents. Check the temperature of people in Washington, D.C. Monday afternoon. After everybody gets back from break and getting an earful of how this is playing back home. That's going to tell you an awful lot, because if Nancy Pelosi starts checking with members of her caucus, and if her elected officials hear that all they were able to discuss during break was the Mueller report and impeachment and why aren't you taking action, that's going to tip the scale. I mean, for example, in the northeast quarter of the state of Iowa, it is a Democrat controlled by voter registration district with a freshman member of Congress who is doing her first run of town hall meetings this week. If she keeps hearing about Mueller report, if she keeps hearing about impeachment from the people who attend her town hall meetings, don't you think that is going to be powerful as she goes back and says to her speaker, I like this job, I want to keep this job, we need to do this. You know, I mean, and it's a lot easier to get that information when you're out in the field as opposed to hunker down in Washington. The other thing I want to mention about the Mueller report is that I think Democrats and Republicans, particularly in Congress, but generally Democrats and Republicans, are both disappointed. And they're disappointed that they're kind of in a nowhere land. In other words, I think there were, and this is to your earlier point, There were a lot of Republicans who were hoping that report would be full of damning information, because then they'd have the cover they need to oppose the president, support somebody else in the nomination process, whether it's Hogan, Weld, or, you know, it could be Katie bar the door at that point. But they could make a break with the White House if the report were bad enough. The report, to our knowledge at this point, is not bad enough that they can get away with that without being sent to exile by the National Party. The Democrats were hoping there'd be some more obvious stuff that they didn't have, that they could more easily make the case to the American people, as opposed to what's sitting there. What's sitting there is kind of, I mean, it helps the Democrats more than the Republicans. But again, I'm saying I think each side wanted to see more stuff because it would make their jobs a lot easier.
Yeah, by the way, I think that that's actually one of the best things I've heard about this, that this report actually is far worse for the Republicans, because you're right. It's not cut and dry for them, and they've got to right. they got to swim through this fog. Meanwhile, it's actually pretty dang good for the Democrats, because now you can say, well, what's in the redacted parts? And they can carry this for a while. And I once again, just if you want to go on precedent, the 10 cases of Trump trying to obstruct justice that Mueller points out, there's enough for you that historically, no one's going to come back at you and saying you were overreaching by trying to impeach the president on that alone, forgetting the Russia stuff on the time being. So I think for the Democrats, it plays out a little bit better. But I'll tell you what, we got to take a break. When we come on back, someone needs to explain the Constitution to Trump, because he thinks the Supreme Court can overturn a congressional impeachment. To my knowledge, this is called separation of powers. We'll get to that with Jeff Stein when we do return. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Native Roots Radio is proud to announce we've added an extra hour.
Yeah, Chuchke, 1 hour goes by too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
I'll have extra time to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national and native news from all over the country and Canada.
This new hour is sponsored by Robbins Kaplan LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
We are awake.
The Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul is the perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Offering daily fresh seafood specials, fire-roasted meats, exquisite pizza, and half-price bottles of wine on Mondays and Tuesdays, except on Xcel Energy event nights. Once you experience their cozy fireside dining, extensive wine list, and bar, you'll be back for more. Gift certificates and private dining room for parties available. Located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking, or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
Dad, don't you have a delusional, my dad is radio host Matt McNeil opening line for this ad?
I'll let you speak from your heart this time, son.
Sure. I drive a Rudy Luther Toyota Sienna. It handles great, even during nasty weather, and it carries all my stuff. I play baseball, and the Sienna has room for half the team and all our gear. The Sienna is great.
Having another driver in the family is a stress reliever, but knowing he's driving himself, his sisters, and his friends in a reliable and safe Toyota Sienna is peace of mind. Thanks, Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
At Better Futures Minnesota, we believe everyone deserves a fair shot. We believe in personal redemption and second chances, and that those who are dedicated to change and hard work should have the opportunity to achieve success and make a positive impact in the community. The men we embrace and serve have made mistakes, but they aren't bad people. We work with men who take responsibility for their past and are committed to doing better, who work to create a better life for themselves, their family, and the community. Learn more at BetterFuturesMinnesota.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Surprisingly, of the tweets that we have seen come on out in the last few hours from President Trump, this would fall as number three most foolish. The first one was him defending that I didn't call Bob Costas, I was returning his call. Okay. Second would be the argument that coyotes are armed on our Mexican border. Oh, my God. Like a Wile E. Coyote with a missile, an Acme missile of some sort. Seriously.
He's not the only company.
I really do think the people that think that at one point someone he's just going to pull off a mask and it's going to be Andy Kaufman under there. I think it just there is an element to me that says this could be the greatest performance piece of all time. Anyway, that being said, the third thing he says is he's basically – if the Congress impeaches him, he's heading to the Supreme Court, which I'm presuming is going to be, Well, that's kind of tough, isn't it? Because to my knowledge, the Supreme Court is not going to overrule that. That's the legislative branch's job. As a matter of fact, set out pretty specifically in the Constitution that the legislative branch has the ability to impeach and then try in the Senate a sitting president, correct?
Why are you impugning the memory of Andy Kaufman in this way?
Because let's face it, there are some days I look at Trump's Twitter feed and I'm like, is this some sort of performance piece that I'm just – I mean, it's really heady if it is. I mean, it's up there, thick, deep, layered, but – you know, and that was Kaufman. It's a little bit, it's not in your face enough to be the Monty Python guys. But I mean, I've been trying to think about it, but.
I think you're right on it. I just feel bad that Andy Kaufman somewhere is listening to this program in heaven and going, why you bring me into this? I did nothing. I did nothing to deserve this. No, we have separation of powers for a reason. Every one of these branches of government has its own job to do. And there's no appeal right on an impeachment. Now, and here's why. Who presides over the trial in the Senate? It's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. In other words, it is those two branches working together as a check on the excesses of the third. So you've already got the process in place, the legislative and judicial through the person of the Supreme Court. They're handling the proceedings. So with all due respect, there are no appeal rights. Game over, out of quarters, Mr. President.
Well, and I will say this. I don't think it's as cut and dry that there wouldn't be some Supreme Court justices that would try to intervene. I don't think any considering Scalia was a true constitutionalist and he would have nothing with this. I mean, he would have voted that down. Anything, he would have been very angry if Trump tried to come to the Supreme Court to get him out of an impeachment. But I Alito, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, I'm sorry, I can see all three of them saying, yeah, the Supreme Court should basically be able to intercede in an impeachment. I don't think –
yeah, but that's only three. You're not going to get Thomas. Thomas is too much like Scalia, and Roberts is the swing vote these days. So your point is well taken. The two that got appointed by this president are still in line, and Alito is just kind of floated there. But that again, that's only three, and that's not going to be enough to take it anywhere. But again, you also have to think about the time involved, because by the time there's an impeachment proceeding and a trial, and I'm now saying I understand that it can happen before the next election. I'm not sure that it would, but even let's say that it did. Okay, that's fine. So you appeal. Your term expires unless you've been reelected, which who's going to reelect? Well, I shouldn't say, but who's going to reelect somebody who didn't survive impeachment? I mean, it's just folly.
With a minute left to go here, there really is. If you watch Trump in this last week, since that report broke, there's a real telltale heart quality going on with this guy. The more he thinks about the heart and the floorboards, he is getting more and more unhinged, and it really is actually starting to get a little scary.
So what do? You go play golf with Rush Limbaugh. You get pumped up a little bit and you come back and you're defiant when you return to Washington on Monday. That's what wound up happening.
Well, but as this week has gone on, he does seem to be slipping a little bit more. And I mean, he's screaming for people to fall on swords for him at this point. And, you know, there seems to be enough people around him now that are willing to do so. But that's only going to last so long.
And look at the churn right now. Yeah. I mean, pretty soon it is only going to be family members. And even then, they may decide to bail. I mean, it is true. You have so many interims there at the White House. Best example, quickly, you've got the former Homeland Security Secretary saying, I've got a plan to ward off 2020 Russian interference. And the acting chief of staff says, yeah, don't mention that in front of the president, would you?
Well,
don't mention that in front of him. It'll make him angry. And we don't want to do that.
Jeff Stein, once again, find his books, Common Good Books, TotallyIowa.com. Excellent, Jeff. We'll spotlight this one. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
Yes, sir.
Till tomorrow. See ya.